Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt, and we're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
And good morning. It is 8:36. I'm Mike Diller with you. Joining me on the phone right now, Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Mike.
Boy, I tell you what, you are really light there. So we'll just kind of turn things up there a little bit and see if we can make that work. Well, Paul, a lot of things going on, and the governor, she got caught on tape. Tell us what happened there.
Yeah, a leaked tape this week from a phone call from the governor of New Mexico to, it seemed like a chief of staff or somebody who is close to Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas. They had a conversation and somebody recorded it and posted it on Twitter or X now, as they call it. And it's the governor expressing concerns about seizure of marijuana at the border. She mentions the border is not being patrolled in certain area abutting New Mexico, and that's an issue. But her real concern expressed in this leaked audio is that she sees marijuana plants from the cannabis industry here in New Mexico being seized at the border while the Border Patrol is looking. She mentions that she has held off the media or been able to kind of keep the media at bay for some period of time, but she doesn't want to have to write a hostile or threatening letter to the Biden administration expressing her concern. So instead, she did a phone call, and we all got to hear about it because that phone call was posted to social media. And it's kind of, I don't think this is winning and losing elections kind of stuff, but this just shows what the governor's true priorities are. It's not the people, the potential lawbreakers, the fentanyl coming across the border. It's, heaven forbid, the Border Patrol possibly interrupt the flow of marijuana plants coming northbound from southern New Mexico. So a fascinating and I think perplexing from a political and policy standpoint phone call there with Governor Lujan Grisham.
Oh, that was definitely, I turned my microphone back on, that was definitely an interesting one there, no doubt about it. Well, Paul, on this next one, heads should have rolled, and I think they did, and people should be fired. Albuquerque Public Schools hosts a drag queen at school prom. And I tell you what, that is getting totally out of control.
No doubt. And this was at Trisco Heritage High School here in the Albuquerque metro area. A lot of judgments lapsed. I believe there's a total of four people, including the principal of the high school, who have been placed on some form of leave. Now that means paid leave, and that means that these individuals could and likely will wind up working again at Albuquerque Public Schools, but maybe not as, at least initially, as a principal at one of these schools. It's definitely a story that I think has generated outrage for some pretty significant reasons. First and foremost, drag, while it may be an art form, if you will, that some adults enjoy, and that's their right and choice to do that, this isn't something that should be in high schools or even grade schools or lower, as it is in some places across the country. It's also, I think, just from a prom perspective, this is something that you don't have performers at prom. This is a event that's for the benefit of the students who pay for their tickets and want to enjoy an evening with their friends, dancing and just having a good time. I'm sure some of the students, possibly enjoyed having a performer there, a drag performer, but I do think it's highly inappropriate, and accountability is critical for these individuals. And it's something that really you should have protections in place that this kind of thing doesn't happen again. Obviously, the simplest thing to do is just to not have performers at various proms, at least those who go beyond just a musician or something like that. Obviously, they should have known better.
Well, no doubt about it, but it just kind of goes to show what some schools and liberal aspects will go so far as to promote an agenda that really should not be promoted towards children.
Absolutely. Even high school age kids, it's not something that should be pushed on them, for sure.
Absolutely. Well, I tell you what, I think it's time for the governor to hit some rural school districts and have to get up and ride school buses with this next one, and also the Secretary of Education. 53 New Mexico school districts sue over 5-day school week mandate.
Yeah, 53 schools, school districts, that's a pretty significant number.
Yeah.
I believe the number total is on the order of 90 or so school districts. It's a little tough to find that number because some charter schools are listed as school districts as well. And, you know, I don't think it's fair to call it a mere charter school a full-on district. But you've got more than half of the district in the state of New Mexico currently suing the governor. And that is something that we're not surprised about, because we fought and are continuing to fight the 5-day school week mandate from the governor. The legislature expressed their position on the issue and said we're going to eliminate funds for implementing the mandated 5-day school week. Those were passed in both houses, that resolution, and unfortunately, because of the line item veto power the governor had, she was able to veto that out and then forward her regulation through that process. It's just very, very hard to understand why the governor so passionately cares about this issue. It's not that 5-day a week gets you more school time. In fact, there are very good data points showing that a 4-day week gets students more time in the classroom, they're doing all of the time required by the state, and they actually miss fewer classes due to medical appointments that they can schedule for that 5th day when they don't have school. Also, you have athletic activities, you know, football games, et cetera, where students often are traveling on Fridays. If they are in school on that 5th day, a Friday, they are missing class. If they are already off, then obviously they're not missing class. So local control is a philosophy that the Rio Grande Foundation takes seriously. It's something that even the teachers unions have expressed concern and opposition about the governor and her perspective on this. And we've cited, but I'll just remind your listeners that 4-day school weeks are popular with parents, with students, with teachers, and with administrators. It's the only person, Governor Lujan Grisham, who has passionately and really, unfortunately, continued to oppose having certain school districts go 4 days a week. And that's of their own choice. And the governor just doesn't want that choice to happen.
Well, I know the governor has said that this will increase educational learning in New Mexico, but to me, it's just a cry for everything else we've done has failed. We've got to try this, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in education these days.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Well, the latest regulation being pushed by the governor's education department is totally nuts. So are they pushing peanuts, or are they just out of their minds?
If they were just pushing peanuts, that would be just fine.
Yeah.
Relatively speaking, But there is currently regulations being proposed at the public education department regarding school lunches. And the proposals are really wild. So there are two ways that districts can comply, level one or level two. Level one is the lower level, and that has half of all meals shall be freshly prepared at an on-site kitchen, which is hard to understand. I can understand the idea that an on-site kitchen may seem fresher, but no, just taking Alamogordo, for example, if you have a central kitchen for preparing those meals the morning of the lunch or whatever meal you're talking about, it may be somewhat fresher to have it in person, but if you have a central kitchen and you're getting those meals out, it can be done very quickly and those meals can be very tasteful. But half of all meals freshly prepared at an on-site kitchen. School authorities shall offer at least three items on a weekly basis from New Mexico farms, ranches, or food businesses. Now, that's all well and good, but you know, there's not always an easy opportunity to produce or put forth those items. What items are we talking about? Obviously, green chilies may be a simple one, but it just strikes me as a very challenging proposition, say, during January or December, to offer food items from New Mexico farms or ranches. You're just going to have to store it. And, it just gets very logistically crazy to think about. And then no less than 50% of schools and a school food authority shall grow food on campus. Now you're going to have food growing on campus. You've got to make sure that that is safe for consumption because, of course, this is going to be introduced into the school lunch programs. And you also have to have somebody showing up at the school to manage the crop during the summer because, of course, that's your main growing season. The school won't be, as generally as not, in service in June, July, and August, but you have to get the janitor or who knows who to show up and maintain the crop and water it. And then something else that caught our eye on this is that over 50% of the schools shall have a composting program in place. Now, Mike, I don't know if you or any of your listeners have ever done composting, mm-hmm. but one of the interesting things about composting is that because what you're doing is ultimately breaking down nutrient-rich food items, you know, scraps and the like, and doing so in a an area in the grounds, these composts can cause fires. You don't have to look very far mm-hmm. to find information, or even if you've done composting yourself, you can feel the heat. And sometimes fires start on these compost piles because of the breaking down of that food waste. So as I wrote in a Twitter post on this, it's all fun and games until the next big New Mexico fire starts on a compost pile that somebody who's not an expert, not paid to be an expert on composting at a school, accidentally starts a fire. So this, like I said, it's available at the public education department. You can find ways to comment at errorsofenchantment.com. Right now, it is the most high-profile post we have on the Errors of Enchantment page. The comment period is open right now and will be through, I believe, May 29th. So you'll want to get engaged on that quickly. It's more overreach, more kind of, I think, ignorance and more efforts to just waste a lot of unnecessary costs on New Mexico schools and the people who manage them.
Well, basically, I'm going to say this. Toby Keith had a great song called Wacky Tobacky, and I think that's what's going on with our education department.
I think that may be the case. I don't know. It's they're getting it across the border and into some of the into the governor's staff and PED managing the state education system. Because, oh, and I should mention, you know, it's one thing if this was a school system that was just knocking it out of the park academically, but you know, we should be focused on crazy things like teaching kids to read and teaching kids to do math and be good citizens, college students, and the like. Instead, we get some harebrained schemes revolving around what kind of foods are permitted and where from, and also how we have to dispose of the food waste. It is it's crazy.
Yeah, I tell you what, those far right MAGA ideas of teaching nuclear family and values and good morals and education with reading, writing, and science and math and different things like that is such a bad thing. Anyway, so yeah. New Mexico ranked 31st among states to retire. Well, I learned that the hard way.
Well, we're not 50th there, Mike. So
well, that's true.
Take your victories where you can get them. This is from our good friends at Wallet Hub. Wallet Hub does, generally speaking, a good job with these reports. And if I comment on a Wallet Hub report that I don't think does a good job, I'm glad to point that out. But this is a good report. You know, we know New Mexico, the population is aging. Of course, we have gorgeous weather, a lot of outdoor spaces and activities to do. We're 31st overall, which is not particularly great, but not as terrible as some other states, or we often are in a lot of these indices. So broadly speaking, the report from Wallet Hub looks at affordability, quality of life, and health care. Of course, healthcare being very important to seniors. And we've talked about the tax situation and Social Security tax and how we're one of just 9 states to even have a tax like that in New Mexico. Ironically, that doesn't impact our affordability very much. We could obviously do better, but at 20th, that's the highest score we as a state achieved in the index. So affordability is obviously not just about taxes. It's about the housing market. It's about the tax, the other taxes you might pay, for example, property taxes, and, you know, just groceries and the like. So we're 20th on affordability, where we really take a hit, and unfortunately, despite our beautiful weather, is quality of life. And I know that you're shocked and amazed by this, Mike, but that is due largely to our high crime rate and a few other issues relating to not just personal safety, but kind of social opportunities for seniors. They have variables in here dealing with things like museums and other social opportunities for seniors to, you know, enjoy doing things. It's not all as simple as going for hikes in the mountains. Certain seniors certainly enjoy that, but that's not everybody's cup of tea. And then healthcare. Of course, we know about health care. That's critical to all New Mexicans, but especially seniors. We're 35th in that area. You know, we've talked fairly at length about the medical provider shortage, et cetera. So, you know, New Mexico faces a long road to address crime. They could get somewhere just by being a little more serious, especially here in the city of Albuquerque, about crime. And there's other things that can be done with that. But 31st, not particularly a great score. Where is the best place to retire, according to Wallet Hub? Florida, number one. No surprise there. They tend
really
to do well in a lot of these indexes. Colorado, number two. Virginia, Delaware, Wyoming rounds out the top five. Where's the worst place to retire? Kentucky, followed by New Jersey, Mississippi, Rhode Island, and Oklahoma. So We could do better. And of course, making the policy decision that seniors are a group that we do indeed wish to attract as a state. And of course, with all the budget surplus money we have available to us, the Social Security tax should have been dead and gone many years ago. We should also be reducing taxes across the board, even though that's actually an area that we're relatively strong in, obviously addressing crime and some of these other issues can be relatively easily achieved if we just get serious about locking the bad guys up.
There you go. That'd be a great idea. So Texas didn't rank well either, huh?
Not particularly. In Texas, while they don't have the personal income tax, which is great, obviously not having a personal income tax is more of a factor when you're in your peak earning years. But property taxes are a real killer for the older folks. And, I think also Texas, you have a lot of traffic. You have an influx of population. It's tough for the doctors to keep up with that. When you're in a state, and I've said this about different issues relating to doctors before, doctors build their practice and they don't necessarily easily account for where the population is moving. So a state like Texas, where you have really rapid population growth, is going to have even more doctor-related challenges than we do in New Mexico, where the population simply isn't growing that fast. So we have done some things that make it less attractive to be a doctor here in New Mexico. But thankfully, they've also addressed some of the worst issues relating to that in Santa Fe.
There you go. Well, let's move into EVs, one of our favorite subjects. According to CNN, this is a hefty number, though. Ford lost $132,000 per EV sold.
That's what CNN says. And I'm looking at the article now. It says in the first quarter of 2024, Ford lost $1.3 billion or $132,000 for each of the 10,000 electric vehicles it sold. That helps you drag down earnings for the company as a whole. Ford is the only company that I think splits out EVs as a separate issue. But the thing here is not just about losing money on a per unit basis. It's that they are seeing a decline in the number of some of their more popular EVs sold, which is the Model E. I believe that's the Mustang-looking vehicle, down 20% from the number it sold a year earlier.
Wow.
Revenue plunged 84% to about $100 million, which Ford attributed mostly to price cuts for EVs across the industry. That's something that we've kind of alluded to but never really talked about, is that currently the EV industry, including Tesla and all the others, are busy cutting prices in order to be more competitive in the market. Now, anybody who's been to even just business school knows that when you're just slashing prices, that is not a sustainable business model, because you want to compete on the unique product that you're selling. You want to compete on the value and the quality. You don't want to just be a pure price competitor. That is not a strategy for long-term success. But everybody in the EV marketplace these days, from Tesla on down, is really slashing prices in an effort to try to keep the EV marketplace going. So you might sell those EVs, but really the question is, are you going to be able to keep up that pace? And are these people really replacing their normal vehicle with an EV, or maybe it's the wealthier people who, maybe feel that guilt and don't understand the reality, and they go ahead and buy the EV as a second vehicle because it's cheaper. I think you'll see that coming to a lot of families, especially at the higher income levels.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to say this, and I'm going to say this plain and simple. And you can send the hate mail to me, that's fine. But whoever designed the Mustang Mach-E should be taken out and drawn and quartered. That's all there is to it. I'm a Mustang purist, so that's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, I've seen the meme on the internet of the picture of the traditional Mustang, you know, go back to 30 or 40 years ago, and then the modern Mach-E, and the older car is saying to the other one, you're not my son. And
yeah.
I think that's how a lot of automobile enthusiasts
The best one I saw, and I'll send it to you, it shows a Mustang Mach-E being drawn by a donkey, the future of EV. So I'll find out and send that to you. Well, staying with EVs, UPS and FedEx run into troubles as they transition from gas to EV vans. You think?
Well, you know, this is one of those areas where if you're going to do a transition involving electric vehicles, you would think that the delivery vehicles that companies like FedEx and UPS use to deliver stuff to your house is a pretty easy, kind of layup or start for electric vehicles. I mean, these vehicles stop and start literally all the time. That's especially these days when people like my wife are out there doing their Amazon shopping and whatnot, and I think we all can identify with that. But these vans that can easily, you know, work as electric vehicles because they're also going back to the same place, and they can all be charged up there overnight and then taken out on the roads. You would think that this is like kind of the low-hanging fruit for electric vehicles. But according to this article from Reuters, which was reported at Yahoo Finance, the battery shortages are limiting the supplies of these vehicles, and startup electric van makers are running out of money and shutting down. The head of UPS's fleet maintenance and engineering told Reuters, the question is, how many of those companies, the ones making these batteries and vehicles, will be here in 5 or 10 years? And it's yet another way in which government mandates and policies have gotten way out in front of technology and the markets. And if we ever do see EVs deployed on a widespread basis, it's definitely possible that UPS and FedEx, where they have central facilities where they can all go back and charge easily, they know how long the routes are on a day-to-day basis, and you're actually saving some amount of energy by stopping and starting it, causing less issues than it would for other vehicle types. This would be logistically the type that we would see deployed on a widespread basis. But even UPS and FedEx are struggling with this so-called transition.
You know, I think they needed to go back about 120 years ago or farther and see the transition from horse and wagons and horse and stagecoach to gas vehicles, even small electric vehicles back then, and see how long that transition took. And then to think that we can snap our fingers and switch from gas to electric without an infrastructure, without supply chains. Yeah, I think somebody was sucking on a pipe, and I'm not talking about pipe dreams.
Yeah, I think we're finding that increasingly in politics. And I wanted to bring up one last thing before I let you go, Mike, is that a report came out about the decline in American birth rates. And, after a couple of years post-COVID, when you did see a slight uptick in birth rates, the American birth rate is back down now to 1.62, which, of course, the replacement is about, and I don't know how you do this, but half a kid higher than that. So you know how math works, though. Nobody's having half a kids out there. It's just a matter of the mathematics.
Yeah.
Anyway, the U.S. average is 1.62 children when the replacement needs to be about 2.1. And then I found a map from the same year, 2023, which shows which states are higher birth rate and which are lower. Now, I don't think it's a surprise to you, Mike, or any of your listeners that the states with the highest birth rates are more conservative states. North mm-hmm. Dakota just about gets to 2 at 1.99. Other states like Texas, 1.8. Utah, 1.81, which is at once not surprising that they're on the high side, but it is surprising that Utah, with its large Mormon population, is at the sub-replacement level. Now, when you get to other states, New England is really low. New England tends to be liberal, although New Hampshire's not so much. But just New England is a culturally different and distinct place, and they're way below replacement rates in New England. Oregon, 1.34, California, 1.47. So some of the other blue states on the West Coast also being on the low side. New Mexico's at 1.54, which is relatively high for a blue state, mm-hmm. but obviously below the national average. So I think that is a worthwhile point of information. You know, we talk about where people are relocating and people coming to or leaving New Mexico and how that impacts our economy, but you know, there's profound implications for both the United States and each individual state as the number of young people and the population both drop and drop relatively precipitously. That's going to impact a number of economic issues that state level, and of course our social safety net, Social Security, Medicare, mm-hmm. and just the overall federal budget situation, because you're going to have fewer and fewer people paying into the system and more taking out of the system, and that is setting us up for some challenges here in the future. So I wanted to make sure to talk about that last point there.
Absolutely, absolutely. Interesting facts there. Well, Paul, coming up Thursday, number 601, what will New Mexico's energy transition really cost? And you have Professor Riley White.
Yeah, Riley is a return guest to the Tipping Point New Mexico. He is a wealth of information. We have a really, really great conversation about how we are going to wind up paying for the shift to so-called renewables when it comes to electricity generation. Of course, the Energy Transition Act of 2019, kind of the first of many bad ideas emanating from Michelle Lujan Grisham, her administration. And that one is going to dramatically increase costs associated with electricity. It's going to probably push PNM to merge by a second time around with a different company, and there's going to be a lot of other impacts. So check out Riley and I talking about electricity issues in New Mexico.
That sounds like a great one. Well, Paul, we look forward to our discussion next week. Until then, enjoy the spring weather and get out there and get some exercise, clear your head, and let's get at it again next week. What do you say?
Sounds good. Take care, Mike.
All right, take care. Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.